Welcome into the latest edition of the Rockets Collective. I am Brandon Scott here with LaShard Binkley of SB Nation and the Rockets Fuel Podcast. We do not have Will and Brad this time, but we'll have them next time when we're all back from vacation. But I want y'all to get involved, man. Make sure that you're subscribed to the Rockets Collective on YouTube if you have not already done that. You can find us wherever it is that you get your podcast as well. But get involved in the chat. Leave your comments, your questions. We'll try to get to as much of it as we possibly can. Of course, we are in, at this point, like the back end of the offseason, right? This is the part of it where like the shine has worn off to where we're in rumor mill territory, LaShard. That's where we're at. We're in the rumor mill territory. And we'll start there with Russell Westbrook because I want to make sure that we – and I know you and I did this before the show, characterizing it as a rumor, but like there is no like actual credible report from, let's say, a beat writer that you know that covers the Rockets or any of the national insiders that you know that cover the NBA that's linking the Rockets to Russell Westbrook or Russell Westbrook to the Rockets, like interest either way, per se, right? Like we haven't seen that. Just want to be clear on that. But it has been written about. If you Google Russell Westbrook, the Houston Rockets, the 2020 bubble playoffs not gonna come up. Like it's gonna, there will be more recent headlines about Russell Westbrook linking them to the Rockets and just the idea. So that's how we can talk about it here, LaShard, as a concept. Yeah. I'm gonna throw it to you. What do you think about Russell Westbrook just as an idea on the Rockets, and whether that's a good idea for the team?
So just as an idea, just taking out the fact that it's just a rumor. And that's, like you said, that's the time of year we're in. We're in the dog days of summer. It ain't a lot going on when it comes to NBA. So soon as anything comes out, it's just going to make news all around because there just ain't nothing else going on. But this as a concept is a horrible concept just because Russell Westbrook is a – he shot 33% last year from three-point range. Let's just give him 34 and round it up, which on this team actually, you know, is one of the best. But that's not what the Rockets need. Rockets will need another bad shooter who is a below average defender on top of needing the ball in his hands to be an effective player. He's not the type that's going to be able to play off ball. And on top of that, you got Fred VanVleet coming back. Even though he's not playing back-to-backs, you signed Marcus Smart. You have Bruce Thornton, who I think at some point this season is going to get some run with the Rockets. And then you still got to factor in, even though Reece Shepard may not be a full-time backup, they're still going to be running Reece Shepard at times at point guard. There's no space for him, number one. And like I say, if they had space for him, it just doesn't make any sense. Because if you're the Rockets at this point, if you were bringing in anybody, if you had the roster space, it would at least be somebody that could make an outside shot. And that's just never been Russell Westbrook. He's gotten better since, you know, his rookie season up until, you know, his prime years with Oklahoma City. He's gotten better as a shooter, but he's just not somebody that fits what the Rockets need right now. They got plenty of other guys that are below average three-point shooters. They don't need another one. And if you're going to be a below average three-point shooter, for you to be able to play on an NBA team, he's got to be able to play some defense, and that's just not what Russell Westbrook does at this point of his career. And there's a reason why he's still sitting out there for anybody to go and sign to a contract. And it's just not a good fit for at all for the Rockets, you know, not even considering that they don't even have the space for him to begin with.
Yeah, I think you nailed it, man. When I look at it, so I'm a big Russell Westbrook fan. I've enjoyed the majority of his career, and I enjoyed his one season with the Rockets, honestly, covering them, watching them. I'm a big fan of Russell Westbrook and what he's about, his game. Like anybody that's ever played basketball on any level would be lying if they said they didn't wish they could run and jump and move with the basketball the way that that guy does, right? Like just a special talent. One of my favorite players ever, certainly of like his generation, this generation of basketball players. That being said, with all the respect that I got for the guy and as much as I enjoyed his time, like I think you look, that time is not reflected on as fondly as I feel like it should be, because it wasn't as good as the couple of years before it. And, you know, and certainly, you know, they didn't win anything in the bubble, right? Yeah. But I thought he was good for them, and I respect it. That being said, everything that you just laid out is the case, right? Like, when I think about this as an idea, I think about, like, okay, where would Russell Westbrook fit on the roster? Where would he even fit in the pecking order, right? Like when you try to do the rotation in your head and you know who the starting five is, Russ is not starting. We know that. We know who the first guys off the bench are. They're likely some combination of Tari Eason, Reed Shepherd, and Marcus Smart. And then you got Steve-O coming off the bench, right? And you mentioned Bruce Thornton as another guy. So, like, who's the guy that you want him to take minutes over? Like, whose time is he getting, right? And is Russell Westbrook, as much as I respect him, is he somebody that's willing to play the role? Like Marcus Smart, for example, is somebody who I would expect to know his role and play his position, or at least I would trust him to do that more so than I would Russell Westbrook, as much as I respect who he is, right? Like, as much as I like him, Russ love him some Russ too, you know, maybe a little bit to a fault. And so there's that part. Like, would he be okay with being the 10th, 11th, whatever guy on the roster, you know? And so he is just not, unlike KD, and I'm not trying to just like compare the two guys, but KD is a portable, I say he's a portable superstar. You can drop him in pretty much any situation and you can kind of make him make sense, right? Mostly because he shoots 50% from the field, 40% from three, and close to 90% from the free throw line, and that makes sense on any roster. But Russ, especially now that he is not an elite player, he is no longer an elite player, he is now a much more specific player, right? And the less elite you are and the more specific you are, the harder it is, I think, to fit you into a situation. And so, I don't want Russ playing over Reed Shepherd, or I hate to say it, LeSharp, man, but honestly, like, for what the Rockets need, and you were making this point about the needs, I'd rather see Bogdan Bogdanović out there.
Absolutely.
Just because I want the floor space and I want the shooting. And ideally, I would say this too. Ideally, when we talk about Amen Thompson, and I don't think he would get in the way of Amen Thompson's minutes, because Amen Thompson's going to play no matter who is on the team.
Yeah.
But ideally, Amen Thompson is on his way to becoming his own version of Russell Westbrook, right? Like, that's what you really want as a Rockets fan, and what the Rockets, I think, are banking on. So all that being said, it does not make sense in terms of fit. It's one of those things where, like, Russell Westbrook would have been better than a lot of the guys that they ended up having to play in the playoffs last year. But that's not the standard that we're working with, though, right? Like, we operate under the belief that was just not it to begin with. That's not what we're going to do. And so, you know what I mean? Like, if you get desperate, then obviously, but you're not trying to start off desperate. So that's what I would say about it.
Well, I mean, because at the end of the day, I mean, Russ is, I mean, it's not like Russ is a horrible player even at this point of his career. But again, it all comes down to fit. You know, you got to have a guy that fits with the team. You're already on the playing, you already have thin margins when you're the Rockets. You don't have a lot of room to mess around. And hey, they're not a good enough team or great enough team to where you can, I won't say Russ is a waste of a spot, but like you said, he would have to be taking minutes away from somebody else. They barely even have minutes last year. It was time where we were like, why Reed Shepherd not on the court? Why Reed Shepherd's out on the court? And now you're bringing in Fred, and now you're adding Marcus Smart. And now, I mean, you barely will have any minutes for some of the guys that you already have on the team, on a fully healthy team. So now you bring in Russ, and Russ, I don't think Russ is at the point of his career where he's going to be fine being a cheerleader on the bench. That's basically what you are when you're an 11th, 12th guy. You're not really playing. So if anything, I could see him probably signing with a team that's, you know, a lottery-based team that has plenty of minutes, you know, that's so that he can probably maybe show other teams that he can still be valuable. But I just don't see any contending team bringing Russ on right now just because of what all the stuff we just said.
For sure. So let's talk about potential trades. We are also at that point of the offseason where we can kind of dally, kind of dance around a little bit, right? Yeah. So I thought this was an interesting idea of, like, thinking forward into the season. If there are If there is a trade during the season, who are the top three candidates on this roster to get moved? Who are the top three players on this roster to get moved? I'm going to throw it to you, and I'm curious, because I already got mine. I got my list over here on this other screen. I got I got Hoops Hype up with the roster and the contracts and all of that. I got my list of guys. I want to hear from you and then see how they match up. And the audience, y'all feel free to chime in as well. Let us know if there is a season, if there is a trade during the season, who are the top three candidates on this roster to get traded?
So I'm going to put mine a certain way. So to me, there's two different ways you can do this. There's if the Rockets are struggling, the top three, and if the Rockets are an okay team, but they're around the fourth, fifth seed. When I say struggling, I mean like they're fighting for a play-in spot. To me, that's two different categories, and it's going to determine who you're going to trade. So if they're like struggling and they're like 8th, 9th, 10th seed somehow, something crazy, then that's, to me, Kevin Durant's number one. At that point, if you're struggling with Kevin Durant, there's really no point in trying to keep Kevin Durant beyond this season because he already can leave anyway, so you might as well try to get something for him. So if they're struggling around the close to the trade deadline, Kevin Durant's definitely going to be first on that list. I'm not saying he should be, but if in that case, if you're struggling and you don't look like you're really going to be able to contend at any point, then it's really no reason to even keep Kevin Durant at that point. And then after that, to me, you're talking about, because you're really more focusing on the young guys, I think. If you're struggling, you're kind of looking forward. But you also got to look at what value they're going to have. But you have Kevin Durant, and then you have Fred VanVleet just because of his expiring contract. Then if we're talking about third guys, then honestly, it's probably going to be Tari Eason because he has a really trade-friendly contract for what they signed him for and the amount of years that you can be able to keep him. So that'll be my top three if they're struggling. If they're around the fourth or fifth seed, they're kind of in the middle of the pack and they need some type of boost, then I know people don't want to hear this, but then we may be talking about Alperen Şengün because at that point, they still feel like they can contend and they might want to try to keep Kevin Durant around. And I know some people probably don't want to hear about Alperen Şengün getting traded, but it's not really that Alperen Şengün is a detriment to the team. It's that he has value around the league. You have to look at that as well. Because you can't just trade players without the other team agreeing to it. So to me, if you're kind of middle of the pack and struggling, then you're probably talking about Alperen Şengün. Then you're probably talking about, again, Fred VanVleet because of his contract. And then maybe Jabari Smith could be in that top three just because he has another trade-friendly contract. He's still fairly young. And I think he could fit in with any team that you're trying to trade for. So I think it's kind of depending on where they are around the trade deadline. I mean, of course, if they're in the top three seed, I don't see them making any major trades then because then, you know, they have a chance to contend. But again, it's just kind of how they look when you get to that trade deadline because I think they're going to make some type of move, whether it's going to be a large move or whether it's going to be something on the fringes. It kind of just depends on how they're playing up until that point because we all know if this season is going to determine a lot going forward for the Rockets.
So the best case scenario for the Rockets is that they're a top three seed and they're humming and the move that they make is along the margins, like you just mentioned, right? It's not like a major move because they're so good. They don't want to mess it up. That's the best case scenario. So let's just start there. Then I got two more that are good and bad or worst and obviously not the best. The worst would be what you described, if they're bad and they have to sell everybody. And then that's why I got this comment up here that's got KD, Şengün, and Bari. Because at that point, they're like, if they're, you know, 7th, 8th kind of play in, you know, like really no future, clearly no chance at doing anything, then I think you got to start like seriously looking at blowing the thing up, at least blowing up the way it looks right now. And really, like, deciding based on your roster right now or within your roster right now, deciding on who stays and who goes and really start, like, going all in on these draft picks, like, on restarting this process. And I know people don't want to hear that. People probably want to hear that less than they want to hear about trading Şengün, like, this idea that we're going to start the phases all. You remember the phase? Well, I don't know what phase we in no more, LeSean.
I lost count.
I lost count of the phases, but we're gonna be back to phase one or phase zero if it goes worst case scenario. And to me, in that case, it's Katie, Shingun, and Bari for reasons that you mentioned. Obviously, there's no point in having KD at 38 years old at this point now. No use in having him and you're not contending. Shingun, I think if they're not good, that will have been some kind of indictment on Shingun. Like, I think it's gonna be hard to imagine that if KD is good and Shingun is good, and especially if Shingun is good, that the Rockets would be bad. So if they're bad, I've got to assume that he is underperforming somewhere, somehow, which would be a disappointment. I'm not rooting for that. Obviously, I want him to do well, but that's what that would mean, I would assume. So Shingun's in that mix. And then Bari for the contract, like you mentioned, like he's all of the young guys, quote unquote young guys, that have signed contracts, including Tari, and I'll get to him in just a second, but they're all on like team friendly type of contracts, favorable contracts. So you could make a case for any of them, right? As young players on favorable contracts. But I would go worst case scenario, KD, Shingun, Bari. I think an in between is the expirings, right? You look at Fred, you know, maybe Fred's not the same. Maybe they're okay. Maybe they're about the same that they've been, but Fred's not having the exact impact that we thought he would or hoped he would, right? Or that they hoped he would. And so with that expiring contract, that's clearly one. So in this scenario, I'm going, as before, I went KD, Shingun, Bari, worst case scenario to go along with the comment. And in between scenario would be Fred, Tari, again, because of the contract. And now we're talking about like Marcus Smart or Bogdanovich, whichever one of those guys is having the least impact, right? Because Bogdanovich is obviously on a minimum one-year deal, and Marcus Smart has the option, the player option for next year. But if like, let's say Reed Shepherd breaks out of his shell and it turns out they don't really need Marcus Smart as much as they thought, because between, you know, Fred, Reed, or whatever it is, Thornton, whatever it is, right, that they don't need him as much, then I think that's in play. So I would go, was that Fred, Tari, and I'm going to go ahead and go Bogdanovich. So I think there's a few different scenarios where we could play this out.
Yeah, that's the thing. We have no idea because, again, this is their season. They put a lot in. They didn't make any major trades because they said they want to see what the team looks like fully healthy. So if that fully healthy team goes out, I mean, you're never going to be fully healthy the entire season. But let's just say Fred plays majority of the games up until the trade deadline. Everybody's there, and you're still the 6th, 7th seed in the Western Conference. Then at that point, you got to be like, okay, this is just not going to work. You're going to have to make some type of move at that point, because if you don't, then you're basically just packing it in and banking on that draft pick the next season. Because the Western Conference, the entire league it's a lot of parity, but that means there's a lot of good teams. So at some point, you got to realize, like, hey, we're either a top three team or we're not a top three team. And I think we'll find that out before the trade deadline this season.
We got this comment as well that says, I mean, it's possible if the rest of the squad gets hurt, KD and Shingun being good will still not be enough. And that's a fringe scenario. I think that's a fair point. And in that fringe scenario, I would say still that, like, so let's say if Shingun is still good, I think they keep him. But even if KD is good, but everybody gets hurt and they're in this fringe scenario, they're going to take the shackles off of KD, release him. Or, you know, I mean, you're not released, but you understand what I mean. Like, they're going to trade him to release him from this situation, right? So, like, in that scenario, it's like maybe it's KD, Fred, Tari, right? Something like that instead of Shingun in there. So there's a lot of different ways that this could go. That's why it's an interesting topic, because there are a few guys – really everybody, depending on how the season goes, right, from top to bottom, could get traded, right? Like, you figure not everybody, but anybody is probably the better word, is the word I'm looking for. Anybody.
I think Amen is the only one that's right. Like, it would take a lot to get rid of him. I mean, another guy to keep an eye on is Reed Shepherd. I mean, if he has another kind of good, but below average season, that's another guy, because he's another guy on a, what, $10 million, whatever a year contract. So that, it's just funny. It could go either way.
11 this year. Yeah.
Which is still, you know, not crazy. And he's still young, and there's still teams around the league would be like, oh, we can make him better. He just wasn't good because he's on the Rockets. You know, it's always teams that think that way. So, yeah, it's going to be really interesting because it can go either way. It's no more of, hey, we're going to wait till next year and see what happens. Even if, let's say, God forbid, Fred, you know, gets hurt again or something like that, it's not going to be a, hey, we're going to wait until next year, because it's going to be too many people on the hot seat to be trying to wait another year to wait to see if you're going to be healthy. Because if you're not healthy this year, you're just not going to be healthy.
Of course, I was muted, like it's 2020 or something like that. You talked to Rafer Austin at this event on in Sunnyside. So we're going to take a break real quick, and then we're going to hear what Skitsamalu had to say. I am so excited for summer. I'm so excited for the fall after that. You got concert season coming up. You got football season coming up. And you talk about a way to get out of the house. You're looking for something to do, maybe even a gift idea. I've actually been looking for the best deals that I could find on concert tickets, which is why I want to introduce you to SeatGeek. With over 35 million downloads, SeatGeek is the number one rated ticketing app. There are more than 70,000 events listed on SeatGeek, including concerts, including sporting events, also festivals. All right, so SeatGeek has your back. Each ticket is rated on a scale of 1 to 10, so you know you're getting a good deal. So what I would do is look out for the green dots, because green means good, red means bad. These are amazing deals, so you want to get in on them. And, of course, I've got a code for you guys. You can use the code COLLECTIVE10 for 10% off your next set of tickets at SeatGeek. That's 10% off any tickets with promo code COLLECTIVE10. Make sure you click the link in the description to download the app and have the code automatically added to your account so you can use it later. Thank you, SeatGeek. All right, so on this Rafer Austin thing, I'm going to let you set this up. But before you do, I want you to tell us about this event that you went to in Sunnyside. Okay. Like, you were out there, you boots on the ground. I saw that y'all were talking to Gretchen. And there's a lot of exciting things happening at Toyota Center. So just what did you learn? What did you observe? And what was it all about?
Yeah, so this is the fourth annual. So they every year, last 4 years, they've had a back-to-school bash. And it's great because it gives different school supplies to the, you know, the Houston community. It gives free services like haircuts and things like that. It was at least 1,000 people that came out yesterday. Some people lined up at 1 o'clock outside. So you know that, you know, it's a pretty big event. It's getting bigger every single year. And they pretty much always have it out at Sunnyside. So it was a great event. They gave away a lot of school supplies. And yeah, Gretchen Shear was out there, president of basketball operations for the Rockets. She talked about the renovations. I asked her about that. The renovations that we saw a few months ago, you know, $180 million, if I'm not mistaken, renovations that they have going on. They're all scheduled to be ready by next season, not this upcoming season, but 2027-28. So those renovations have to do with the way the Toyota Center looks on the outside, on the inside, also, the you know, so they can accommodate the Houston Comets. So that's on schedule, and she just talked about how they're trying to work around that, because, of course, they're going to have to work around that for the next year. And then, of course, we also talked to Cynthia Cooper. She was out at the event. She was talking about some of her teammates, how she wants to see Tina Thompson and Cheryl Swoops jerseys up in the rafters at Toyota Center now that Houston Comets are back. So that was a great interview talking to her. And then, of course, the clip we're going to see is Rafer Austin. I had asked him about, of course, you know, he knows a little bit about playing point guard. So I asked him about Fred VanVleet, what they missed not having him last year, and what's going to mean for them to have him back. And it kind of, one thing he pointed out that I really hadn't thought a lot about is that it's not great that they didn't have Fred VanVleet last year, but it did give Reese Shepard and Amen Thompson experience in the playoffs that they probably wouldn't have got if Fred VanVleet was there as a crutch. Of course, you wanted Fred VanVleet there, but we only saw it as a negative that he wasn't there, that at least they got some experience. I know Amen played the year before in the playoffs, but he wasn't asked to be one of the guys during that time period. And also, Reed didn't really play at all last season or the year before in the playoffs against Golden State. So these guys got a lot of experience. So that's something that Rafer pointed out, and I thought it was a good point.
So he brings not only a veteran leadership, but he understands that what it takes to win in the playoffs. I think these guys would learn from him, you know, going forward.
All right, so of course we had it in midstream. So let's go ahead and play Rafer Austin at Sunnyside with LaShard and the Assemble Media.
I think obviously we realized that he was missed last year. But the good thing, all the other guys, Thompson and those guys, they got a chance to see what it's like to be the player.
Of course. Of course, live recording. Did that freeze on just me or on everybody?
It was the player, but basically what he was saying was, he was just saying that it gave those guys an opportunity to play in a high pressure situation, and they were the main point guards that the Rockets had. So that's the experience that they can take on to this season, and I think that's a really good point, because a lot, you know, time we didn't think about it that way. We just kind of saw that they were out there struggling, and why isn't Fred out there? They needed Fred, you know, that's the only way they were going to win. But now they have that experience, and now you do have Fred back. And they don't have to be the guys this upcoming season, at least you're not hoping, as far as when it comes to a point guard position. So I think that's just a good point, that the more experience they got last season, hopefully that'll help them go into not just the postseason, hopefully the Rockets get to, but just throughout the entire season. So I thought that was just a really good point.
All right, LaShard. So I don't have the biggest ego, but I am going to go ahead and pat myself on the back a little bit, because I was making this point. Even before the playoffs, I thought, so I want to say on this show and on others, Sports Radio 610, which is, by the way, about to be 95.7 The Fan on the FM side. I should point that out. But even on the B Block with B Scott, anywhere I've been saying, you know what? This has been ugly. This has not been pretty. We watched a lot of those games together at Toyota Center. It was not pretty a lot of times, man. It was rough. But I always thought that the experience – at the very least, was going to be good for them. This is before we even talk about the playoffs. I'm talking about the whole – I mean, Fred's gone the whole year, the whole season. They thrust him into these roles. And to your point about how it was viewed, like the narrative was – and it was correct that, hey, Amin is being kind of misused and played out of position, and they're not really maximizing his talent because they got him on ball when maybe he should be being – maybe he should be off ball a little bit more and somebody else should be on ball. They ain't had nobody to be on the ball. You know what I mean? Like, he was forced into the situation. And I think throughout the season, we fixated on his misuse as opposed to, which I think was the priority in the moment. But long term, and I think this is what Rafer Austin is pointing out, and obviously he knows it way better than, and can tell you way better than I can, but I could see that of like, this is going to be good for them down the line of just like you said, they're not going to have to beat a man, but when they have the ball, they'll have a better idea, or should at least have more experience on what to do with it. They see a situation like, you can't tell me that getting cooked all year on those double teams with Kevin Durant, they're not going to learn something from that. You can't tell me that them honestly being baited to having a man Thompson just stand out there in the corner, that they're not going to learn from that. You can't tell me that the mistakes that were made in the playoffs, Reed Shepherd getting the ball stolen from him by LeBron James in the game that we all know that they had and that they lost and they gave away, that they're not going to learn from that. So I just think that experience, the playoffs included, but even before the playoffs, just the whole thing, the whole season was super valuable, even if it was tough to watch, and even if it was a big part of the reason why that team did not live up to its potential.
Yeah. And I mean, you got to just think, just real quick, you got to think about, you train all offseason for a particular role, and right before training camp, all that changes. And that's exactly what happened last year. I mean, Reed and Amin, Amin was expecting to play off ball again. I know they were going to have him in the guard position, but let's just be honest, he was still going to play a lot off ball. Same thing with Reed. Reed was kind of, I think, probably focusing more on just developing his offensive game, not really, you know, having to be a 30-minute-a-game point guard. And then all of a sudden it all changes right before training camp. So now you got to readjust everything. And that goes with the coaching staff too. We know the coaching staff depends on Fred a lot. So now they had to try to figure it out, fly on the go. And we know that, you know, yeah, MA is not exactly the one of the top coaches when it comes to offense in the first place. So it was just one of those situations where, yeah, I mean, Fred not being there, yes, Fred is not a superstar, but, boy, it really did change a lot of the dynamics on this team.
100%. So before we go to some of the questions, or actually we do have one more before we go to the questions.
Yeah.
Let's do this. The biggest boost from Fred VanVleet's return, kind of along the same lines of what we're talking about here, or the impact that Fred is going to have, I think that there's a number of different directions that you could go with this one as well. A couple of them a little bit more obvious than others, but I'm curious with you what yours is, and let's compare notes. So who do you think stands to gain the most? Who's going to get the biggest boost from Fred VanVleet being back, assuming that he's healthy and he's in the mix and he's looking good?
To me, you can say Kevin Durant. Kevin Durant's going to be great regardless, but to me, it's Alperen Sengun. Just because now he doesn't have to be the guy at the top of the key trying to orchestrate the offense, because it's hard enough for a point guard to do that. But at least when Fred's out there, nobody's expecting him to go out there and score 20 points a game. But Alperen Sengun had to go out there, try to score 20 points a game, orchestrate the offense, and still try to get his own shot. Now, with Fred back, he doesn't have to worry about that as much. And another thing that's not really talked about a lot is late in the shot clock. Who was the guy that usually took those late in the shot clock shots when Fred was playing? It was Fred. So now you got him back, and maybe they didn't always go in. But to me, that takes a lot of pressure off of some of the other guys. So I think it really is going to benefit. And then we're not even talking about the pick and roll. I think they really had a good connection when it came to the pick and roll between the two of them. So I think overall, it's definitely going to help Alperen Sengun. I mean, if you want to go 1B, I think it's Amir Thompson, just because of what the stuff we just talked about. Now he can strictly play off ball. Only time I think he's best as a quote-unquote point guard is off of a fast break, when he's pushing the ball up off a fast break. But in a half-court offense, now he doesn't have to worry about that. He can play off that dunker spot. He can play cutting back door. He doesn't have to worry about trying to set up the offense and then get everybody else involved. He can just really just focus on his own game. So I think those are the two guys, but definitely Alperen Sengun. I think you're going to see a much better overall season from Sengun, because it's going to be less pressure on him.
Yeah, shout out to Derek for this comment. I actually agree with this. He says, I think from an offensive standpoint, it's Sengun, and probably for a lot of the reasons that you just laid out. He says, I think from an offensive standpoint, it's Sengun, and from a defensive standpoint, it's a man, because he can go back to being strictly point of attack without having the burden of being a point guard. That's why I agree with all of that. I'm with you there. I would actually probably would have reordered it if I were doing it, but this is actually a better way of putting it. Like I was thinking of men over Sengun, and not even just the defensive part, but the on ball stuff on offense that you talked about too. So I was going to go a men Sengun, in that order, but I think you can go either way, flip-flop them, and for a lot of the reasons that you laid out. So since you said Kevin Durant, you can just easily go, and you kind of just brush by that one, and I agree with you there. I am going to just point out that it'll be good if you can have a world where, between both having Fred back and a men's experience that we've just been talking about, right? It'd be great if now you can have a world where KD don't ever have to bring the ball up the floor ever again.
That's true.
And Sengun can only do it in, like, sporadically, right? The way he used to, instead of, like, he might be their second best ball handler, you know, or best ball handler on any given lineup that they might have out there. So I'll just go Kevin Durant anyway, since you did, you know, you went Sengun, Amin. Let me just point out KD and bringing the ball up the floor and the double teams that we have talked about ad nauseum at this point and watched ad nauseum at this point. I think that's going to be a big part of, like, not just having another ball handler, LeSharp, but also having another decision maker and another brain, or honestly, the best brain on the team out there on kind of like you said, being the extra coach the extension of the coaching staff, the coach on the floor, however you want to look at it, as kind of just helping them get organized and make better decisions out there and know what to do when they run into these scenarios. Like I would hope that by early in the season, we don't see as many of the KD double teams. You know, we'll still see KD double teams, obviously, but like trapping them, you know, like
every play
yeah, at the 3-point line, right? Like he can't even really get into what he's trying to get to. I think we should see far less of that. So I just point out KD anyway, because I do think that he's going to be somebody that's going to benefit. And I point out too, like he's like the main guy that we have not seen play with Fred VanVleet, right? Like yeah. I agree with everything that you said. And I look, the pick and roll point, I'm glad you brought that up, because that's going to be a big piece of it as well. Like Şengün having a true pick and roll partner, which I think there was a point when Reed was really kind of coming along where we were like trying to see if there was a thing there, but, and hopefully it continues to develop, but like, man, the KD pieces, I really everybody, you know, as long as he's upright is what I'm trying to say. As long as he's upright, I think everybody stands to gain from it.
Even MA, we haven't pointed out, because Fred is the coach on the floor. So now that takes pressure off of MA to have somebody else that, hey, he listens to Fred. So if Fred's on the court and he say, hey, I don't think we should go this way, I don't think we should do this, he's going to listen to Fred outside of probably Kevin Durant more than anybody else on the team. Let's just be honest. So it's going to help MA and the coaching staff as well. Man, I know some people are saying, you know, might be like, dang, y'all really putting a lot on Fred. He's not like a superstar, but on this team, for his role, he is a superstar for his role on this team. So, yeah, it's going to make a difference. At the very least, they're going to be more organized than they were last season.
No doubt. All right, so I'm trying to get y'all some money on Prize Picks before we answer some of these questions, because we do have to get to y'all's questions. I'm curious of what we should bet today. We could do
we could do baseball, because you know that. I don't know what time did the Astros already play today?
Nah, they're actually playing right now.
Okay, so yeah, we got to skip over that.
Only issue here though, let's see if I can do this. Let's see if we can do this. We don't have, dang, they really don't have nothing for us. Okay, so check it out. Let's do this. So they got season bets. If we wanted to. So let's see. Is Victor Wembanyama gonna have a 50-point game this year? Right? So this is a half on 50-point games. Is
it one game, 50-point game? Yeah.
These are pretty interesting. Look at some of these, man. Is LeBron James gonna average 7 assists a game or less? Mind you, they said he's gonna play point guard. Intriguing. He's gonna have a lot of options to get a ball to, and we know LeBron James is LeBron James. Oh,
yeah.
These are some interesting. Giannis on the 50-point game. Is he gonna have at least one?
Yeah, he's gonna have at least one.
Is Luka gonna average 30? This is a lot. I'm gonna go to less on Luka.
34. With 30? Nobody else?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a lot, though.
Nah, I was just saying, 34 is a lot, bro. He's capable. I'm not trying to say he's not capable. I'm just saying that's a high number, a high bar.
I think that Ja Morant number is kind of high. I don't know.
Ooh, 21 and a half for Ja. Oh, this is fun. I wish I had looked at this before the show. Oh man, I like these prize picks. Shout out to
you. We can go more triple doubles. That's automatic for LeBron.
More on the twos. Okay, yeah, so let's start there. Let's go. So let's do a more and a less. We're gonna start.
He's gonna make it a point to try to get triple doubles this season.
While we do this, let me tell the people how prize picks work, just in case y'all don't know. So for new users, y'all can play $5 and get $150 in bonus lineups if you win. All you got to do is play more or less on a few player stats. That's how we play this game. That's how we do this every show on Rockets Collective. We play more or less on a couple of player stats. We lock it in and we get it cracking. So So make sure that you check out Prize Picks. We got a promo code for you. All you got to do is use that promo code HMA. New users can get $5 to get $150 in bonus lineups if you win. All right, so we went the more on LeBron James season triple doubles. They got him on two. So we predicted three. What else you thinking? They got Ant at 28 a game. Jalen Brunson at 26 a game. These are some good ones. 1.5 triple doubles on Vic. So is he going to have one or two? One or more? These are good. These are good, man. I got to admit, Prize Picks.
And the 23 is, I don't know, Jaylen Brown, points per game, because he's going to have a lot of people to, there's a lot of people going to be taking shots in Philadelphia.
Ain't no Rockets on here.
Oh, well. Yeah, you know, I didn't care about the Rockets.
come on, Prize Picks. let's do one of these 50-point game ones. Who do you think is not going to have a 50-point game?
I don't think Jokic is going to have a 50-point game.
You don't think Jokic is going to have one? I can get with that.
I can see him going for a 30-point triple-double multiple times, but
yeah,
50 points, I don't know. I don't see him getting a 50-point game. Either him or Victor, I can see either way. One of them not getting a 50-point game.
I mean, I don't see Steph at the age of 137 years old getting one either. I mean,
that is true.
All of them. That's the rub here, though, right? Everybody on this list is capable of a 50-point game. We would not be shocked.
Steph could have a 13 3-point game or something crazy. You know, he could still pull out one of those. So if I had to go between those two, I would probably go Victor not getting a 50-point game.
All right, let's do it.
Let's do Victor.
Yeah. Let's do it. Let's do it. Let's have a little hate for the robbery. As well. So we're gonna go ahead and lock that in. Let's get back to the program. All right, so Prize Picks, y'all know what to do, man. Use that code HMA and get it going. All right, so let's knock out a couple of these questions and we're gonna get out of here, man. Like, we've already done longer than we intended to, man. You got
as usual.
Yeah. Half the crew, half the show is supposed to be. But let's just knock. We got a couple of these. Derek, shout out to you. He was already active in the chat, so shout out to him. I know you wait for questions later, but are some of the lineups you both – what are some of – let me do that again. What are some lineups you both want to see this season? I think Reed is strictly with KD, Amin, and Adams, and Fred is always – with Shingun. This is an interesting thought. I have not thought this through. What you think about this? And while you talk, I'll think about it. I think you're going to see a lot of mixing and matching, but I'm curious. And go ahead, Derek, and let me know for your rationale for that. But what you think about this lineup and what are some of the lineups that you want to see?
I think with the fact that Adams is not going to be playing back-to-backs either, and I don't know how much they're going to depend on Capella, I think you're going to see more Jabari Smith at the five lineups, like a Jabari, KD, Fred, Amen, and Reed lineup. And because, you know, then you have all the guys can switch. You can kind of hide Reed on one of the lesser guys. And then, you know, everybody in that lineup can shoot except for, you know, Amin. Maybe Amin comes out and shoots 35% this year. But as of right now, Amin will be the only guy in that lineup that can't shoot. So I think you're going to see more small ball this year than you did before. I mean, I know they probably want to try to do the double big thing again, maybe not as much as in the past. But, again, it just kind of depends on how much Steven Adams is going to play, because I don't think they're going to really play Clint Capella much at all this season. Even we saw that even when Adams got hurt, they still was getting Clint Capella didn't even play. So I think like a Jabari at the five lineup, I think would be interesting. Something I definitely would like to see.
Yeah, I think Adams is another name that didn't come up when we were doing the trade candidates. I don't remember either one of us mentioning him, but he's got to be in the mix as well, just depending on what he can give you and what their style of play is ultimately going to be with this group and with this personnel and just kind of figuring out what they got. So I'm with you there. And I also like this thought that Derek has, because this does, I don't know if this is actually what it's going to be, but this does, what he presents here,